Gannett's TAC Advisory Committee meeting, Thursday, March 1st, 2018. Hopefully I'm only carrying this for the next 5 minutes or so. They're running late, so. First thing on the agenda is to determine a quorum.
We have a quorum.
Then we have the approval of the January 18, 2018 minutes. Do I have a motion?
So moved, John Clancy.
Second. McCleary.
Any discussion?
Page 4 said the next regular meeting is May 3rd.
I'm gonna find
that. So that doesn't, just as a regular meeting or what?
You mean in the minutes it said that?
Yeah, in the minutes it said the next one is May 3rd.
Yeah, so it probably should have been March 8th, or March 1st.
Yes.
We can make that correction.
Policy.
Yeah. Glad somebody read it.
Okay, so basically the motion is to approve as corrected.
Yes.
Yeah, second as corrected.
Okay. Can we take the roll? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Same sign? Passes. Okay, next on the agenda is the staff report. We have the financial progress report. Curtis Baker.
All right. And thank you, Amy. Mr. Stephan's now here, so.
Oh, yeah.
You can. Amy was our past TAC chair, and unfortunately, John Chiskowski wasn't able to be here today either, so appreciate Amy filling in as we had to search our brains for who was the last sitting chair that still is here. So. The attachment 3A, as you'll see, it goes through January 31st. We've expended about 38% of the budget. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there were.
Is this halfway through the year or not quite?
Yeah, about halfway through the year. Yeah, January. Well, technically, I guess December 31st was halfway, so this is a little more than half. So we've had some staff turnover and that we aren't able to, you know, we've been a little slow in spending the money as quickly as we'd like to be, but we're in very good fiscal.
Yes. Okay.
We feel second.
Thank you. Thank you. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Technical progress report, Mr. Baker.
All right. First on our list for technical progress report, I'd like to introduce a new AMATS employee, Louisa Kreider. She's back there. Louisa, if you want to, yeah, raise your hand. She started with us a few weeks ago. We're excited to have her on board, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from her, at some point through all the work products that we do. Biggest thing I wanted to let you know about was that since our last meeting, we did have the Trump infrastructure proposal, a 55-page release. That essentially flipped the federal match on its head from 80-20 to 20-80, with about $100 billion. The proposal was to make about $100 billion available sounded kind of like discretionary money in terms of grant programs, et cetera. But that money would be awarded to communities based on how much local funds they were able to bring to a project, with the minimum match being 20%. Obviously, we were pretty disappointed with that. It's quite a bit, obviously, different from our current 80-20 setup. Now, this would not replace our 80-20 funds that we have. This would be an additional. But I think the problem is that, and what we've seen now, hearing the response from a lot of states, is that this just isn't enough. I mean, especially for transformative projects that in your mind might not be funded now, a 20% federal job, 20% money isn't going to make you do a project that you weren't going to do before because of financial issues. So it could help some projects that are already in the pipeline where we already have some money going, but it's hard to imagine how this would help, especially in our area where there's not a real incentive for private financing. But then immediately after that proposal was released, then Trump was caught in a meeting saying that he needed a 25-cent gas tax increase. And so that appears to still be on the table as a potential funding source for future infrastructure, which is why I think all the more important when we talk about the gas tax of, you know, doing something timely now potentially let Congress know that we do support that. There was a hearing today in the Senate. Secretary Chao spoke, basically supporting the Trump infrastructure plan. There was very little that seemed to come from that, although a lot of senators were very concerned about the current language. There is a lot of conversation about the NEPA process and potentially streamlining the NEPA process from, you know, hoping to go from the 6 years to 2 years. But then there's also been a lot of dispute about that because most people say that, or I shouldn't say that, that sounds like a political thing. Most people are saying, apparently financing is usually what takes projects longest to be completed versus environmental impact statements, et cetera. It's usually waiting for the money versus the environmental side. But there are some things in there that we could anticipate seeing that maybe might make it in a bill. So other than that, I think it's sort of an interesting time. Obviously, the tragic news in Florida, I think, kind of bumped everybody off of that conversation for a while, and now we're into gun control. And it's hard to know if we'll be back to infrastructure while Congress is still in session before this summer. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Baker? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the AMATS Federal Funds Report. Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to report that we are officially through another funding cycle, CMAQ, STBG, resurfacing, and TASA. I guess the ball is now in your court. Those of you that received funding for projects, the next step is to have them get them programmed and into the system. The funding balance sheets that you have in your attachment do not include the new projects yet. We're kind of slowly adding them in as we get bid numbers, and we may have to move things around a little bit to keep things fiscally sane. But we are slowly adding them in, and the same with the TIP. We'll be developing a new TIP this fall, so we'll actually add a lot of them into the new TIP as it's developed. To program your projects, you need to contact Christine Surma at District 4. And I sent out notices at the end of January, so we're hoping that you can accomplish that within 45 days of receiving that that notice. Another thing is fiscal year 2018 is quickly passing by. We'll soon be entering the fourth quarter, and there's still some projects that need to sell. So if any of you have any issues or need help with anything, let us know. It's real important that we try to keep things on schedule because we still have a balance left in 18, but the balance is below the permissible amount, so we won't be losing anything. But we want to try to keep what we have scheduled on track, and that leads me into my last topic. On March 23rd, we'll have a project review meeting at District 4. And I'll be getting some things out to you next week about that. So that's about all I have on funding. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Poulet? Okay, thank you. Move on, no old business. Moving on to new business. The 2014 through 2016 traffic crash report update. Mr. Poulet.
Okay, thank you. The 2014-2016 crash report is done. During my report, I'm going to discuss trends, Every crash report we did a year and add a year. We'll look at some of the high crash sections and intersections. We'll touch on bicycle and pedestrian safety. Talk a little bit about safety performance measures, which is relatively new, and review the ODOT safety program. The good news is between 2015 and 2016, there's actually been crashes actually decreased slightly. We have about 231 less crashes overall. Unfortunately, that's still up from 2014. We're still above that that volume. And what's really amazing is injuries, which is the orange. Injuries stayed just about the same all 3 years. This graph shows not just injuries, but this shows serious injuries. The latest trend now is to kind of separate injuries out, differentiate between a serious injury and just a cut on your hand or something. So fortunately, we've seen improvements in serious injuries also. Each of the 3 years, there's been a downward trend, and I contribute that mostly to safer cars and highways. You know, I think over the years, all the projects this group has done, and it's I think it's really making a difference. This graph is fatalities. Now, unfortunately, we did have a few more fatalities, just two more. But unfortunately, we have nine more fatalities in 16 than we did in 14. And that is a statewide and actually a national trend. Now, what I did in this slide is I took, there's no vertical scale. I just took our graph of serious injuries and I just compared it to the statewide graph of serious injuries. And as you can see, there's a downward trend on both graphs. And I did the same thing with fatalities. Unfortunately, as you have probably been reading, there's been kind of an uptick statewide in fatalities, and we also have had that same kind of trend. So not sure why that's happening. That kind of has all the safety experts baffled. Could be distracted driving. Could be, you know, the opiate epidemic might be affecting highway safety. Just not sure. Briefly, I just want to touch on how we do our safety report now. We take the data, we get the data from ODOT, and we plot them. We plot the data in GIS using the coordinates that are provided. And this may sound easy, but actually it requires a lot of checking, because we thoroughly check where things are plotted. And many times they're just plotted wrong for one reason or another. Freeway interchanges have huge amounts of crashes sometimes, and we have to kind of determine if that happened on the main line or on ramps or on the intersecting street. And then we have to kind of sort out intersections and non-intersections, which usually the general rule is if it happens within 250 feet of an intersection, it's intersection related, but not always. It just depends on a lot of factors. Briefly, our high crash criteria for highway sections, it's a minimum of 10 crashes per mile per year and a crash rate of 1. And for intersections, it's a minimum of 10 crashes in the 3-year period and a crash rate of 1 per million approach vehicles. Ranking the locations, we rank the locations based on a composite score, What we do is we take the total number of crashes and we rank it based on total number of crashes, crash rate, and then on severity index. And number of crashes is 40% of the score, crash rate is 30%, and severity index is 30. And what this does is it kind of gives us a more balanced approach to ranking the locations. For highway sections, we had 178 crashes that met that criteria. Those are in table 4.1 in the crash report. It's a complete list of them. I just want to briefly touch on the top five. The first one is East Main Street in Kent. This one is always kind of hovering near the top. I have a suspicion that this might have been used as a detour since Summit Street has been under construction. It might have been a little busier than usual. And hopefully, once Summit Street opens back up fully, that may drop down again. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard from Market to Broadway. This one will probably drop off the list in the next crash report or so, because in 2017 it was completely closed as they were redoing the inner belt, and actually with the new configuration of the inner belt, hopefully that will improve safety there. West Exchange Street is also always near the top. They're doing a road dye project there, and I'm hoping that will improve safety. Gent Road, this is a new one, and nothing in particular has happened in that section other than I think we have a lot better accuracy now with the new method using GIS, and I think that's why we're seeing some of these segments that we haven't seen before. And the fifth segment is State Route 14 in Streetsboro. And that one also usually hovers near the top because it's just such a busy stretch of highway, and it has a lot of truck traffic. Intersections, there were 310 intersections that met the minimum criteria. That's table 4.2 in the report. Briefly, the top five intersections is State Route 14. With intersecting Brook Valley Trail and Sandy Lake Drive. Now, this is a new one, and this is new because I think before we had the accuracy we have now, we used to put these crashes, just we lump these crashes in the section. And I don't think anything bad or new is happening there other than we're just finding these locations that that weren't on the radar before. Maple and Rhodes in Akron is always near the top. Broadway and East Thornton, that's one that should improve with the main Broadway and I-76-77 project. I think that intersection is either being eliminated or vastly being changed. East Market with Mogador Road and I-76 is one we always see near the top. And the last one is Corporate Woods Circle and Corporate Woods Parkway in Green. And this one, once again, is there's always a lot of crashes there, but we just have better accuracy now, and I think we're finding more that we may have missed before. So, and that one is also, there's a roundabout scheduled for that intersection, which should help safety. Freeways, we don't do the freeway analysis. ODOT does the freeways. They do the whole state out of their central office in Columbus. They divide them into rural and urban freeways. And what they do is they divide the freeway up into 10th mile pieces. And it's very hard to list the sections because it's like just one log station to another log station. So we did include a map showing the ones, I think there were nine in our area that that were near the top, and that is actually map 4-3 in the report. And I included this this picture here because, you know, this might be one of their segments, but it's just it would be hard to describe that because it's based strictly on log points. Moving on to bike and pedestrian crashes. Bike and pedestrian crashes have a very high percentage of injuries. They're more random and spread out. It's hard to come up with locations. The best I can do with bike and pedestrian crashes is say, I think they're proportional to population density. We did include a couple maps in the report that shows the location of them, and you can see a lot of them happen where the population is more dense. Many of them involve younger people, and because of that, they may not know the rules of the road, and they may, and also a lot of drivers also don't know how to handle bicycles when they encounter a bicycle. So this is one area where I think education is very important. I think educating both the bicyclist, the pedestrian, and the driver is important. The good news is that bicycle crashes remained relatively stable, and we actually had even a few less injuries, and they're down from 2014 considerably. Actually, these last couple of years, we've seen the lowest number of bicycle crashes in recent years. I threw a couple things in that I thought was interesting about where and when they happen. 60% of bicycle crashes happen at intersections. There's two trends that I see at intersections. The first one is a lot of younger bicycle riders blow through stop signs and signals. And the other thing I see is a lot of times cars turn right into a bicycle. So most bicycle crashes happen at intersections. And then obviously bicycle riding is weather related, so obviously you have more in the summer months, but you have this big spike here in September, and I'm not sure why that happens. Maybe it's back to school, maybe it's shorter hours of daylight, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Pedestrian crashes have always been kind of up and down. Between 15 and 16, they went down a little bit, and so did injuries and fatalities. There's always a few more fatalities with pedestrian crashes than you have with bicycle crashes. And once again, they happen. A couple of things of interest: they happen mostly, almost evenly between intersections and sections, and walking is not as weather dependent as bicycling. I walk from where I park into the office every day, if it's a sunny day or if it's cold and snowy. So they happen more throughout the year. But once again, you have this spike in the fall. I don't know if it's probably back to school. Maybe it's college students also, but you still have that spike in the fall. Safety performance measures. This is a relatively new thing. We have to kind of measure the progress we're making. And this is page 10 in your report. We have to take a five-year running average in five different areas. We want to do those averages for number of fatalities, for fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, serious injuries per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, and then also look at non-motorized injuries and fatalities. And I was very pleased to see that we actually had improvements in all the areas. And you can read more about that on page 10 of the report. And finally, the ODOT safety program is probably one of the best in the country. They have over $100 million worth of funding annually that they put towards safety projects. I'm sure many of you have received some of that funding. The 2 days to remember is April 30th and September 30th. Those are the dates that applications are due in the central office, and you should have them into your district office at least 6 weeks earlier. So we're very fortunate to not only have in Ohio to not only have the funding, but to also have very good access to data. A crash can happen this afternoon, and we could look at the police report by the end of the day or tomorrow morning. So we're very, very fortunate to live in a state that values safety like that. So concluding, both number of crashes and fatalities and injuries, not a lot of changes between 15 and 16. All the locations on those lists, in those tables, are eligible for ODOT's safety funding. We also use this information when we score projects, when you apply to receive our funding. And most importantly, all these locations are sorted by community on our website. So you can go to our website and you can actually look at what's happening in your community, as opposed to going through all the locations and trying to pick them out. And one last and final thing, if you have a location that you are concerned about and it's not on the list, you can give us a call. I'd be happy to go out and look at it, maybe make some suggestions for some low-cost improvements, or maybe give you an idea of what I think might help. Because any crash is one crash too many. And with that, I'd like to open it up for questions if you have any. Yes?
Could you go over the slide that shows how the composite score was determined?
Sure. Okay, what we do is, first of all, we have this minimum criteria. Let's just talk about intersections. It's a little easier to understand. First of all, we look at all the intersections, and we pull out the ones that have at least 10 crashes in a 3-year period. Okay, then we take that list. That eliminates a lot of them. Then we take that list, and we look at how much traffic is on it goes through that intersection. And from the traffic volumes, we calculate a crash rate. Okay, so now we have, now we eliminate more, because many intersections will have 10 crashes, but the crash rate will be less than one if it's a busy intersection. Okay, so now we have our final list that meets this criteria. So what we do is we rank them, and we rank them by number of crashes, we rank them by crash rate, and we rank them by severity index. Severity index takes into account fatalities and injury, and what we do is we give the number of crashes, we multiply the rank by 40%. We multiply the rank for crash rate by 30%, and we multiply severity by 30%. So, in essence, the number of crashes counts 40% of the score, and then the crash rate which takes into account traffic volume, accounts for 30%, and the severity index, the severity of the crash, accounts for 30% of the score.
So the one with the highest total number of crashes, that's given the number one.
Right, right. So but the one, for example, in our area, the location for intersections, the location with the highest number of crashes is always Tommy Circle. I know you can argue that, oh, that's not an intersection, that's six intersections or eight put together or whatever. But for our purposes, I consider that one intersection. Okay, I know there's different theories about what that really is. That's always ranked, that's always has the most number, highest number of crashes. But the crashes are usually low speed, rear end crashes. So there's not many injuries. So it ranks real high with number of crashes, and then it ranks, and also there's a lot of traffic, so the crash rate is also low. So it ranks real high for number of crashes, but it ranks low for severity and crash rate, so it ends up being like in the middle.
Okay. So now with for roadway segments, is it are we taking for the first one the total crashes or the crashes per mile?
Crashes per mile, yeah. Length comes into play with that, with segments.
Any other questions? If not, they have requested a motion, so I'll entertain a motion.
Green light, move to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Any more second?
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Very good. Next, we'll move on to Transportation Performance Management Overview. We have a report, and we're very honored today to have Federal Highway Rep Carmen Steeman here, who will be giving us that report. So, I think... Floor is yours.
It's in the meeting materials for you. That's it. Should be the first one. Oh, there it is.
So if anybody wants a copy of the slide, just contact Carrie for your
sure.
And
we'll make sure
that you get your set. So transportation performance management was first included in the transportation legislation map 21 with the Plan for Progress in the 21st century in 2012, and then they carried it forward in the FAST Act. So what is transportation performance management? It's defined as basically a strategic approach that looks at the system, information from that system to make investment and policy decisions to achieve some national performance goals that were set forth in the legislation. And there are seven national performance goals. Safety, so they want to achieve a significant reduction in traffic fatalities, serious injuries on all public roads like we just talked about. Infrastructure condition, maintain the highway infrastructure in a state of good repair. Congestion reduction, to achieve a significant reduction in congestion on the national highway system. System reliability, improve the efficiency of the transportation system. Freight movement and economic vitality, looking at the national freight network, strengthening the ability of rural communities to access national and international trade markets and support regional economic development. Environmental sustainability, enhance the performance of the transportation system while protecting and enhancing the natural environment. And as we were talking about, there's talk of streamlining that process. And the last one is reduce project delivery delays, reduce project costs, promote jobs and economy, and increase the efficiency of the movement of people and goods by accelerating these projects and their completion. By eliminating delays in the project development and delivery process, including reducing regulatory burdens and improving agencies' work practices. So, why do we want TPM? It basically provides key information to help decision makers understand the consequences of investment decisions across the different transportation modes. And it also improves communication between decision makers, stakeholders, and the traveling public. So which federal agencies are involved in HWA? And that's what I'm going to be talking about in this presentation. And that FTA has released information on transit management plans and safety transit measures may be developed also. So in that case, you'll deal with FTA Region 5 in Chicago. So some really important definitions, because there's a lot of confusion sometimes. We're going to be talking about measures and targets. And as you can see on this slide, the measure is that expression that's used to establish the targets and then assess the progress toward achieving an established target. The target is the quantifiable level or the value for a measure. And it's to be achieved during a specific time period that's set forth by the regulation. And FHWA established measures through the final rules. So ODOT and the Ohio MPOs will establish targets through a cooperative process over the course of this next year. So an example of a measure is the percent of trucks with reliable arrival times, and a target is the numeric value, such as 80%. So what's your role? Well, MPO boards will need to approve targets through resolution, and you already have done the safety one. And you're going to consider targets when proposing projects for funding, and then share information with the public. So the process has six steps, if you will. In the first step, the national goals were established in Map 21 and then in the FAST Act. Step two is developing performance measures, which again is what we are using to establish targets and then assess our progress to achieving that target. And those were established in final rules, and I'm going to be talking about those next, so bear with me. ODOT and the Ohio MPOs will establish numeric targets. Again, that's the quantifiable or the value for a measure. For each one of them, and I'm going to be going through each of them. MPOs typically have the ability to either support the state targets or set their own targets. And again, really stressing that TPM should be included in throughout the planning process and all the decision-making policies and procedures, especially between steps 3 and 4. Steps 4 and 5, targets will need to be included in the state plan, Access Ohio, and MPO plans and reports. And they are by a certain date, so each one is different. And in the STIP and the long-range plans. As part of the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, MPOs will need to create a system performance report to provide detailed information on TPM, the different TPM measures in the region. And also, MATs will need to create CMAP performance reports. By including these targets and plans, reports, and on national websites, there will be an increase in accountability and transparency at the regional, state, and then national levels. So, again, please, I beg your forgiveness for not making the copies, but this might be a really valuable thing for you to keep as a reference. So, as we talked about before, FHWA established measures through the final rules, and these are referred to as PM1, PM2, and PM3. PM1 is the safety measures. PM2 contains the measures for pavement and bridge condition. And then PM3, system reliability, freight management, and the CNAC program, congestion mitigation and air quality. Safety came first, and the time periods are different for PM2 and PM3, and they don't match up with PM1. So for PM2, ODOT has established targets for each measure 1 year after the effective date of each final rule for PM2 and PM3. The MPOs have to establish targets 180 days after ODOT has established targets for each measure. And then ODOT and the MPOs have to incorporate information on TPM in the STIP and their TIPS and the long-range plans 2 years after the effective date for each rule for PM2 and PM3. Certain questions that we get asked a lot, TIPS do not have to be updated if there's an administrative modification. They only need to be updated if an amendment is needed. The TPM information included in the TIP relates to the entire program of projects, in the TIP, not just the projects related to the amendment. And then if a TIP amendment does not require an amendment to the transportation plan, TPM information does not need to be included in the transportation plan. So for most targets, MPOs can establish targets in one of two ways. They can agree to plan and program projects so they contribute toward the accomplishment of ODOT's targets, and that we refer to as supporting the state targets. If an MPO supports the state targets, they don't need to determine numeric targets for their region that are equivalent to the statewide targets. They would simply report the numeric statewide targets where needed. Or two, MPOs can commit to a quantifiable target for their metropolitan planning areas up to the individual MPO. What we're saying is the MPO staff should evaluate the data for the measure and consider other factors such as programmed projects that would impact the targets in their areas. Like we talked about before, safety measures came first. The safety measures apply to all public roads, regardless of ownership. The targets are established by ODOT and all MPOs on an annual basis. ODOT will report its targets on August 31st of each year in its highway safety report, and the MPOs will report their targets to ODOT by February 27th following that. Targets are based on a five-year rolling average, like we heard. ODOT established their targets for this first time in their highway safety improvement program report in August of last year. And then you guys should have received a letter from Michelle May at ODOT with the detailed information on ODOT's targets that we have. So pavement measures. All MPOs will need to establish four-year targets for the pavement measures shown on this slide. So I won't go through each one. Bridge measures. MS will need to establish four-year targets for these measures as well. Other information to be included here. All bridges over 20 feet carrying the NHS, regardless of ownership, including bridge on and off ramps connected to the NHS are included. The deck area of all border bridges counts for both state DOT as well. Reliability measures, again, EMS will need to establish four-year targets for the reliability measures listed on the slide. Freight movement, again, EMS will have to establish four-year targets for the truck travel time reliability or TTR index. So let's talk talk about CMAQ emissions. AMETS has to establish a 4-year target for the total emissions reductions for volatile organic compounds, nitrous oxides, and particulate matter by November 16, 2018, because the MBO boundary contains areas of maintenance for the 2008 ozone standard and the 2006 PM2.5 standard, and has a population over 200,000. It's interesting to note that there's no target specifically for ozone because, like conformity, we measure the precursors for ozone, in this case, nitrous oxide and volatile organic compounds. For particulate matter, we measure PM2.5 and nitrous oxide because they are precursors for PM2.5. Since AMATS has counties designated for both PM2.5 and ozone, they'll have to establish targets for PM2.5, nitrous oxides, and volatile organic compounds. One target per precursor or pollutant. So three targets. For CMAQ traffic congestion measures, the traffic congestion measures are peak hour excessive delay and the non-single occupancy vehicle, known as UV. And they're established based on urbanized area boundaries instead of metropolitan planning area boundaries. So, the Cleveland and Akron urbanized area is a large orange shape with gray lines separating one from the other. So, AMETS will need to coordinate with ODOT and NOAACA to establish targets for the Cleveland urbanized area by May 20th of this year, because the Cleveland urbanized area extends into some of the large counties. The whole urbanized area contains counties which are in non-attainment for the 2008 standard for ozone and the 2012 standard for PM2.5 pollutants, and is in maintenance status for the 2006 standard for the PM2.5 pollutants. And it's a urbanized area also has a population greater than 1 million. So, AMETS will also need to coordinate with ODOT, NOAACA, and SCATS to establish targets for the Akron urbanized area by October 1st, 2022, because the Akron urbanized area extends into Medina County and Stark County. This urbanized area contains counties that are non-attainment status for the 2008 standard for ozone and 2012 standard for PM2.5 pollutants, and maintenance for the 2006 standard for PM2.5. And has a population greater than 200,000. A very tiny portion of the Youngstown urbanized area extends into Portage County, but there is no NHS in that area, so AMETS will not have to coordinate with the Youngstown urbanized area targets. So this is just showing all of the MPOs, the requirements for each urbanized area for the two CMAQ traffic congestion measures in the table. So you approved your plan last year, so you're not going to be, there's only one MPO, it's Lima, that's going to be establishing or updating their plan in the first round. Akron, AMETS, NOAACA, and SCATS are in the performance period two. So, but they're advising all the MPOs that aren't in performance period one to learn from the experience of those that do so. Learn from Lima. And they're going to have to coordinate on all the targets in their planning documents. Laura Toole could not be here today. She's the overall TPM point of contact for our office. And then you can contact either of us if you have any questions or need information. So, does anybody have any questions?
I think it's obviously crystal clear. And I think the reality for our agency is that in most cases our intent is to work with ODOT on whatever their goal is, like we did with safety. The tricky one will be when we have to work with our counterparts up north in Cleveland, because sometimes they don't like to take the easy road, so to speak. So I'm sure there will be some coordination that we will have to do with them as well. But it is a lot, and I think that it's something that when you wonder what we're doing on a daily basis, this is part of this is a big part of it, is collecting this data and then also determining what those targets are and how we best fit into that kind of national side. Just one other little brief thing. A lot of these, as you might have heard Carmen say, are on them. It's the NHS system, the National Highway System, which is actually a smaller system than the functional classified system that we use to fund projects. So one of the things we battle internally is, do we start collecting this data for just the NHS, or do we try to get the data for our whole functional classified system so that we can use that data for multiple planning purposes? And so that's something that we have to, that we'll be dealing with, how easily collectible, because some of the data will be given to us by ODOT, and if they decide to stick with the NHS, then we might not be able to get the data for the other roads. And so,
and there's been, ongoing coordination going on. So, any questions that you guys come up with, I'll get back to Laura so that you can coordinate on that data level. Sometimes that's going to be tricky.
And I think the big picture, when we looked at safety, what they want to look at to really take it down to brass tacks is the idea that, okay, we mentioned the Interbelt project. So, safety funding put in $5 million into the Interbelt project. Now we want to see, did that actually lower the crash rate, the crashes that actually, that happened there. And so I think that there is a part of this that makes a lot of sense. Are we, is the federal money that we're using, is it doing what we say it's going to do when we encumber it? And so that's really the big overall purpose of the federal guidance.
And then for on a national level, how are the programs progressing? And maybe we need to, switch some more money into safety versus, some of the other programs. Ultimately, they want to look at what's best for the entire system as well as local, regional, state. So.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to resolutions. Resolution 2018-06, Mr. Poulet.
Okay, thank you. Attachment 6A is amendment number 6 to the 2018-2021 TIP. This amendment adds two new projects and revises the funding to one project. The two new projects are Ravenna Road, which is a new resurfacing project in Twinsburg. This project actually was one of the recent projects that were approved through the most recent application process. And Twinsburg has this project ready to go, and it has been programmed. So this is adding it to the TIP to make it official. The construction will be in fiscal year 2018 yet. And the other new project is a state project. This is a large freeway project. It's Interstate 77 beginning at Waterloo Road, and then it's going north to the Central Interchange, and then it goes west. It becomes to Westlake, which is 76 and 77 combined, and it ends over by the Kenmore Lake. This is a large project. Engineering is requested in fiscal year 2019 for $1.8 million. And construction is requested in fiscal year 2021 using $85.5 million in federal funding. The one project that's being revised is Interstate 76 in the interchange, the Booster Interchange project in Barberton. What's being changed or being revised is the state is shifting $22.5 million from various sources to a what's called a Garvey bond. And I'm not real familiar with those. Steve is here from ODOT if you have any questions, but it's just shifting sources is all that's happening in this project. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. The two big ones are state projects, and the Ravenna Road resurfacing is an AMAS project.
Very good. Any questions, Mr. Poulet? Not, I'll entertain a motion.
Anybody vote to approve?
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Any more second?
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very good. We'll move on to resolution 2018-07. Mr. Baker.
All right. So, you know, we've been talking about this since December and January, supporting an increase to the federal gas tax. At the January meeting, after we spoke with this committee, we met with our policy committee just to have the discussion of what they were interested in supporting. The consensus was supporting a 15-cent gas increase indexed to inflation and a resolution of support of that nature that would then we would pass on to our congressional representatives to let them know that there is a need for additional funding. I know we've gone over a lot of this currently. The gas tax is about 18.4 cents per gallon, with 24.4 cents for the diesel. It raises about $35 billion a year, and we spend about $50 billion a year, or $55 billion a year. And so, therefore, obviously, at the end of this FAST Act, we will be insolvent and will not be able to pay our bills. In the past, when we have had resolutions like this, the TAC has always, abstained en masse, tabling the item to let the policy committee decide, as it is definitely more of a policy issue than a technical advisory issue. However, that is up to this committee. We provide you the opportunity. If you want to table it, you're welcome to, but if you do want to vote on it, you're welcome as well. So with that, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Baker?
I think what he just said made a lot of sense, just defer to policy.
Mm-hmm. So do we have to make a motion then to table it, or do we just accept
we
no
have,
motion
we
tables it, right?
In the past, we've always done a motion to table. And then it would be the chairman's responsibility if you wanted to bring it back off the table. I think we could just as easily defer, and you know, if maybe make a motion to defer, and then
I'll do that for you. A motion to defer to policy committee for a vote on that resolution.
Nate White, second his motion.
Okay, so the motion and the second on the floor is to defer to policy. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That carries.
Excellent.
Very good. Other business? None? Any business or comment from the committee?
Oh, I'm sorry. We did have some interest in ODOT coming to present to our TAC committee talking about their doing things smarter with less money.
Performance-based project development.
It's ODOT's new way of doing business, and for the June TAC, we are going to host it actually at ODOT District 4. We're going to have someone from central office, Dave Holstein, come and speak to you about that. It will be immediately after TAC, so you don't have to stay. Obviously, we would encourage you to stay, but we'll have our TAC meeting in June, and then Mr. Holstein will present after that. So I just wanted to give you a heads up. We'll talk more about it in May, but that was it.
He's a great speaker.
All right. Well, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Is our next meeting May 10th or June?
Next meeting is May 3rd.
I'm looking. All right.
Now I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So much.
Second. Okay. Second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Let the record show that we'll be adjourned at 2:30.